Welcome to Anzac Letters Home, a project developed by Wendy Riley for O'Kane's Bay Museum. This podcast series features personal letters drawn from museum collections and letters printed in the Akaroa Mail from New Zealand Expeditionary Force soldiers, New Zealand nurses and their families, as read by members of the Christchurch Performing Arts community. Written to family and friends, the letters tell of their experiences during World War I. They write of everyday things like food, sightseeing and the doings of their friends, through to life under constant shellfire, attacks on the enemy and the deaths of their mates and fellow soldiers. For this reason, we need to add a warning. Some of the content can be harrowing to listen to.
Private Norman Young, in a letter to his sister, writes on the 17th of May from the General Hospital, Alexandria, as read by John Clark. I am having a change. Turkey did not agree with me. I had about 3 weeks there. Some of my mates didn't have 1 hour. I had great luck. The first day I had my rifle smashed in two while carrying it, and half my putty blown off without any personal injury. We had 8 days solid going at the landing place. Then we embarked on destroyers in the middle of the night and landed at Cape Hellas, the entrance of the Dardanelles, at daylight. We had 1 day's spell here, and then we went to relieve the South Wales border chaps and the Royal Scotch Fusiliers. We marched up to the second line of trenches, getting there at midnight on Friday, and were ordered to get a little sleep. On Saturday, 6th of May, after breakfast, we were told to be prepared to advance in 10 minutes. All the French were on our right and we were on the left flank. Anyway, the whistle went. The artillery fire opened and we advanced amidst a hail of bullets, shrapnel bursting in all directions and machine guns playing havoc with us. We got up 300 yards closer and entrenched, but it was simply slaughter. We were having a snack and digging in for all we were worth as well, when an order came that our left was threatened, and we thought they were going to attack before we were ready for them. However, we were told to fix bayonets and stand to it, but they changed their minds and didn't come on. At 5:20, we got orders for another advance, the whole army this time, and this proved just as hot as our first day's landing. We captured a village halfway up the principal hill, which the Turks were holding. On this occasion, for 3 hours, our casualties were over 200. I got 4 bullets in me and was praying for a final one to put me out of my misery. I got 1 in the neck and 3 in my right hip. But now I am not in the least downhearted and hope to get better soon and have another go at them. In the trenches, the Turks are poor shots. You just see a long flash of bayonets, and then they pull the triggers but keep their heads well out of sight. I am feeling much better and am eating well today, and that is a good sign. I can stand on one leg. Lieutenant Morgan was killed just a few yards from me. I had to crawl on my stomach for at least 1/4 mile to the stretcher bearers. If left in the front, the Turks strip the wounded or dead and cut you about. Hence my 1/4 mile crawl. It was terrible torture. There are many Germans with the Turks. The hills at this part of the peninsula are covered with thyme and sage, which appear to be native shrubs, and the fields are nothing but a blaze of scarlet poppies and white daisies. Private Norman Young, who went in the main expeditionary force with the 16th Waikato Regiment, gives the following graphic description of the attack from Cape Hellas after the landing had been effected at Gaba Tepe. Private Young is well known on the peninsula and took part in peninsula football and athletic meetings. His letter is as follows, as read by John Clark. Nile Delta Hospital, Alexandria, June 11th. We were 10 days at Gaba Tepe, and on May 6th, the New Zealanders were sent down to Cape Hallas at the entrance to the Dardanelles to reinforce the French and the Tommies. We were taken down at night in destroyers and landed at 4 in the morning. We had a spell all day and were then taken to the trenches and relieved the Borderers and the Royal Scots on the left with the French on our right. At 10 the next morning, Saturday, 8th of May, we made an advance under tremendously heavy fire and gained 300 yards, but lost heavily. We dug in and held on all day. And at 5:20 p.m., another order came for New Zealanders to be ready for another general advance at 5:30. All the naval guns started, every artillery gun, both French and our own. Our airships were dropping bombs over the Turk trenches to show the warships the range by having smoke all along the Turk trenches. The hills were nothing but smoke and flame, and you could not hear a thing for the noise of the big guns and artillery. The guns ceased and the order came, "Advance, New Zealand!" All you could see was a mass of heads and bayonets rise together. We just got out in the open when we had a hail of bullets from rifles and machine guns and shrapnel. It was a hell. We were dropping everywhere. We would make a rush for 100 yards and all throw ourselves down for a blow and then on again. Here I got one on the side of the neck which was bleeding freely. Dozens were lying groaning all around. We all made another rush. The French on our right could not keep up with us, and we got a lot of enfiladed fire as well. This time I was brought down with 2 in succession in my right hip. I lay and groaned. There was no cover from the bullets that seemed to be skimming the ground, and I got another in my left hip. It was the end of me, I thought, and was longing for another to finish me. I looked around in the twilight and saw hundreds rolling and groaning, some killed outright. It was a sad night. One chap could not walk. He was singing, "It's a long way to Tipperary," but his voice died away. He was bleeding very hard with a wound in his stomach. I will never forget this night. All my inside seemed to be running out, and I was blood from head to foot. There seemed to be no hope of getting away. I managed to undo my equipment and got my water bottle out and scraped along on my stomach and gave 1 or 2 poor beggars that were yelling for water a drink. But the bottle soon was empty. I scraped along among the daisies and poppies back to a place where some of the Royal Scots were digging in for the night. I was just about done and very weak from loss of blood. 2 of the Royal Scots carried me to the dressing station. There they gave me an injection and cut my clothes off, bandaged my wounds, and took me down to the beach to catch the boats, taking the wounded to the hospital ships. It was a night I won't forget in a hurry, and all who took part in it are the same. Instead of shrubs for shelter, we only had daisy fields and scarlet poppies. It was much more open than at Garba Tepe. It put me more in mind of Banks Peninsula with the fruit trees and the green fields of corn instead of Coxfoot. We watched the Turks have about 30 shots at our airplane one night with a big gun of theirs, but it had no effect. The New Zealand main body is nearly all out of action. The mounteds have gone as infantry now. A lot of us will be ready for the firing line in a few weeks again, and we are looking forward to seeing Constantinople before returning to New Zealand. There are 30,000 Germans mixed up with the Turks, and they are responsible for the determined way the Turks are resisting. There are very few peninsula boys in the infantry, but quite a number in the mounteds. The attack we had on the Suez Canal was only play compared with Gallipoli Peninsula. Well, as I have scribbled enough, I will draw to a close, hoping to see the old peninsula on my return and have another go at your running events and football matches once more. Sadly, Private Norman Young of the 16th Waikato Infantry never returned to see the old peninsula. He was killed on 17th of August 1915 at Gallipoli.
The Anzac Letters Home podcast series was created with help from the Christchurch Performing Arts Community, the Akaroa Mail, Akaroa Museum and O'Kane's Bay Museum. This project is dedicated to the memory of the Banks Peninsula men and women who served in World War I and in some cases made the ultimate sacrifice. To tell their stories of war and learn from these first-hand experiences so we may never forget.